a factual data creation facility production.
Recorded live in front of a bargain computer display located within the luxurious studios of the Factual Data Creation Facility, it's the OFNT Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jim Schaefer.
Luxurious? Well, compared to the recording space of the previous location, I guess you can say that. Anyway, welcome to the episode number 282, which I'm calling a tech podcast during a tech news drought. Yeah, the dearth of interesting tech stories continues. But don't worry, that won't keep me from doing my weekly bloviation session.
No.
That made by Google event can't come soon enough. Now, today's featured mic is the Heil PR40. I'm going to rotate mics now and then. If you can actually tell a difference, let me know which one you prefer. All right, let's get the episode started, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Tech news.
I'm assuming that you're starting off with Apple news as usual.
Why, yes. You know me so well.
No, not really. You're just so predictable.
True that. First up, TheVerge.com has the following headline. Apple returns blood oxygen monitoring to the latest Apple Watches.
What?
Unquote. Well, The Verge should have added a sort of to the headline. If you are the proud owner of an Apple Watch Series 9, 10, or Ultra 2, yes, your watch will again be able to monitor your blood oxygen levels.
Yay!
However, in order to actually see the results of that blood oxygen monitoring, you'll have to open the Apple Health app on your iPhone or iPad.
Still, you have to give Apple props for finding a way around the limitations put on the company by the courts.
Yes, and it was quite sneaky of Apple. Of course, having to view results on devices other than the watch itself is inconvenient. But in reality, the only people who would absolutely require instant feedback of blood oxygen content are elite endurance sports athletes, who've since moved on to other ways of obtaining these readings, be it smart rings or other smart watches / fitness bands. Still, it would be nice to be able to do this on the Apple Watch itself. I wonder if you will still receive a low blood oxygen level warning via your watch, though. I couldn't find any information within this or any other article on the subject. I'm surprised Apple hasn't reached a settlement with Masimo. And that's the company that successfully sued Apple back in 2020 for patent infringement and receiving an import ban of Apple Watches in 2023 until the case is settled. Masimo's patents expire in 2028, so Apple will most likely wait until then before returning blood oxygen monitoring to the Apple Watch. That dashes any hopes Masimo has of receiving a boatload of cash from the giant fruit company, either from patent royalties or a company buyout from them. Perhaps Masimo will realize this and come to some sort of agreement with Apple before 2028. I've reported previously on the rumors of a cheaper-than-normal MacBook based on an A18 chip instead of the usual M-series chip Apple uses in their computers. The rumors are getting stronger lately, and it appears this MacBook is for real. According to an article from AppleInsider.com, this lower-cost MacBook will launch late this year or in early 2026 and cost $599 for the base model.
Wow!
That price would make this MacBook $300 cheaper than a base model 13-inch MacBook Air. The screen size for this less expensive MacBook is expected to be slightly smaller at 12.9 inches. The computer will be available in silver, blue, pink, and yellow, colors that sort of mirror the base model iPhone, iMacs, and iPads. This rumored MacBook will kill two birds with one stone in Apple's product lineup, replacing the discontinued plain MacBook and the 11-inch MacBook Air. The A18 chip won't be powerful enough to handle heavy video editing or complex software, but it should be powerful enough to handle most tasks an average consumer would throw at it. It also would make a great college-type laptop. I've always said in the past that if I was just starting out, I would get a Chromebook, Pixel A series phone, and a mid-range Android tablet. Apple, though having lower-cost devices such as the iPhone SE, base iPad, etc., would still cost more than a Pixel/Chromebook setup that I just described, but not as powerful. With this rumored $599 MacBook, the $599 iPhone 16e, and the $499 11-inch iPad Air, well, you'd have a pretty darn powerful setup for just a little bit more money than the equivalent Android-based setup. The Whoop Band, a screenless fitness and health-based wearable, has become the darling of the fitness and sports world. The company uses the old give 'em the razor but charge 'em for the blades approach to sales. Whoop will sell you the fitness band for cheap, but in order to get it to function, you have to pay a monthly or yearly subscription. At least that's how the company started. These days, you can purchase a Whoop One Band for $199, a Whoop Peak, which is their intermediate model, and that's for $239, or a Whoop Life for $359, which is the latest model. All come with a 12-month subscription. After that initial 12-month period, you again have to pay $199, $239, or $359 per year, either in monthly payments or one yearly payment. And that yearly or monthly payment is what has kept me from buying into the Whoop ecosystem.
Yet people still will claim that the Whoop band is cheaper than an Apple Watch.
Well, initially the cost is a bit cheaper, but over time the Whoop band can cost you much more. And what happens if your particular model of the Whoop band is discontinued?
Well, I'd guess you'd have to purchase a newer model that could cost more in your initial cash outlay, thus increasing your yearly subscription rate.
Exactly. I have a very nice collection of mechanical Swiss-made watches that I haven't worn since getting an Apple Watch. If I could get all the fitness data of the Apple Watch without having to wear one, I could again start wearing my expensive Swiss mechanical watches. Then again, I wouldn't get important notifications nor the ability to make and receive text messages and phone calls, which I would surely miss. The one feature that the Whoop Band has that I would like the Apple Watch to have is blood pressure monitoring. But according to AndroidAuthority.com, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not certified the blood pressure monitoring feature of the latest model of the Whoop Band, the MG. And MG stands for medical grade, and wants the company to remove that feature. The reason being that the results the Whoop Band gives for blood pressure are not accurate and could lead to injury or even death of users. Well, Whoop is refusing to remove the blood pressure monitoring feature, claiming that the Whoop Band MG is not a medical device, despite naming the band medical grade. Whoop has asked for a meeting with the FDA over this, but in my opinion, they'll have to either remove this feature or face fines and or removal of the product from the market.
Yes.
Users of the Whoop Band MG have reported that the blood monitoring feature is in fact not accurate, so the company has that against them.
Now I understand why it's taking Apple so long to bring blood pressure monitoring to the Apple Watch.
Yeah, I'll wait until the Apple Watch is equipped with that feature. At least I'll know it will be FDA tested and approved, and thus more accurate. An article from AndroidPolice.com, authored by Mark Jansen, that I found interesting, is about the author not looking forward to the August 20th Made by Google event.
What?
In fact, he claims he'll probably not even watch it. This despite him being firmly in the Android ecosystem, especially Google's Android hardware ecosystem. The reason he gives for probably not bothering to watch the event is a reason I share with Mr. Jansen. He's sick of hearing about AI. He shares the opinion that this modern term AI, is nothing more than machine learning renamed.
I don't know why, but that sounds awfully familiar to me.
Well, that's because I sort of ranted about this in the last episode.
Perhaps the author, Mr. Jansen, is a listener of the OFNT podcast.
No.
I doubt that. I feel that the tech press, as well as a lot of consumers, are getting tired of hearing about AI. Instead of useful hardware upgrades or innovative form factor changes. He posits that machine learning is not as an emotional term as AI, and when the term machine learning was used to describe these features, the press and consumers ignored them. So the industry decided to rename machine learning to AI in order to gain more attention for their products.
Oh, yes.
Well, I believe the author is spot on.
Hang on a minute. These claims may apply to those other products, but they don't apply to myself. I'm able to speak freely and say whatever I want, all the while using my superior accent.
I hate to tell you, but that's just not true.
Then prove it.
Okay.
I am the walrus cuckoo kaju. Wait, what's happening to me?
It's called machine learning. Tech I'm using. Last week I decided to put the Mac OS 26 beta onto my M2 MacBook Air. I made that decision because since getting my iPad Pro, I don't use the MacBook much. Also, the MacBook isn't mission critical for me. Like other betas, besides the UI...
Do you find these UI changes gorgeous?
Yes, they're very gorgeous. And the journal and phone app now being present, well, I don't notice much of a difference. Speaking of the iPad, while the delay in joining my Wi-Fi network, which I talked about last week, is great for battery life, it's becoming a pain in the butt. Prior to putting the iPad OS 26 beta on it, as soon as I woke the iPad up, it was ready to go. Since installing iPad OS 26 beta, I have to wait up to 90 seconds for the device to join the Wi-Fi network.
Ah, poor baby with your first world problems.
Well, when you're used to something behaving in a certain manner, and then it doesn't, it kind of throws you off, doesn't it?
Yes.
Hopefully, this delay in joining the Wi-Fi network isn't one of those features, as Apple likes to call them, and be corrected with the next iteration of the iPad OS beta.
As you're apt to say, time will tell.
I guess it will. A new public beta of iPad OS 26 dropped last Thursday, and it didn't fix this Wi-Fi problem. So maybe it is a feature, not a bug after all. Anyhow, the iOS 26 beta has now settled down. Gone is the stuttering I was experiencing, but unfortunately, battery life is still taking a hit. But for my current use case, it's just fine. While exercising, I have my phone on a charger, and while driving, it's charging while using CarPlay. Oh, CarPlay itself now displays weather alerts, and Apple's sports app provides scores. These two things are nice touches and welcome additions.
Yes.
tvOS 26 continues to be rock solid. Then again, besides the user interface changes.
Do you find these UI changes gorgeous?
Of course I do. Well, there's not much of a change from the previous version of the operating system. At least that I can tell. I'm waiting to see if the rumored new Apple TV streaming box has a camera or at least the ability to attach one to it for FaceTime calls. And I'm still wondering how audio will be handled. Other than the betas of the various Apple operating system, well, there's not much going on as far as tech I'm using. All my tech is behaving as it should, which of course is a good thing. I will have some new tech to talk about next week, though. For now, what that tech item is will remain a secret.
Oh, a teaser. How exciting.
Entertainment news. Well, I watched Happy Gilmore Part 2 on Netflix last week. My lovely wife dislikes Adam Sandler and the movies he produces, so I watched it while riding my indoor cycle. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Adam Sandler, but I did enjoy the first Happy Gilmore movie, which came out way back in 1996. Back then, I was a new guy at U.S. Customs, and a lot of my new co-workers shared my enjoyment of the movie. It gave this newbie a way to break the ice, so to speak. Unlike modern Hollywood, it took nearly 30 years for the sequel to come out. I enjoyed the movie, but more for its nostalgia than anything else. Like the first installment, it follows the typical hero's journey, but with corny situations and jokes thrown in along the way. What I also enjoyed about Happy Gilmore 2, and even the first movie, is that there's no message being dictated to the audience, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
If only the rest of Hollyweird would follow this example. Yeah, who am I kidding? So if you haven't watched the first Happy Gilmore movie yet and intend to watch this new one, I recommend doing so first. It will help you understand the backstory better. Either way, this movie is a fun, light comedy which is badly needed these days. Too bad Hollywood seemingly has no intention to make more movies like this. Another genre of movies I miss is the hard-boiled police or private investigator type. Like Happy Gilmore, these types of movies can be made on the cheap, unlike those comic book superhero movies which cost nearly one half of $1 billion to make. Besides, I think today's audiences have superhero fatigue, but yet the studios keep cranking them out anyway. With the recent flop of the new Fantastic Four movie, which by all accounts wasn't a bad movie, with even the hypercritical geek reviewers agreeing, this should prove to these studios that this superhero genre needs a break. Back in what you might recall being the day, these hard-boiled thrillers were always around, with some becoming theater-released hits, while others did very well on cable television networks. Of course, these days, cable has been replaced with streaming. Movies like Hammett, Confidential, and Sin City are some of my favorites. Every once in a while, some low-budget independent film will find its way to some streaming platform, which could be considered hard-boiled. Some good, but most not. I believe Hollywood should return to making what's called small films. These types of movies have modest budgets, but not too modest as to ruin the whole film. Rom-com movies seem to be the only genre that can be considered small movies that are still being made these days. You know, Netflix and Amazon could throw a few million dollars towards hard-boiled type films, instead of funding stinkers like War of the Worlds. There are plenty of young actors around who would love having the work, while at the same time honing their acting chops. They'll demand only modest salaries in comparison to established actors, who all seem to be in these superhero movies lately. The key here is finding writers up to the task. I'm sure they're out there, you've just got to find them and pay a decent wage. Most current writers seem to be hired fresh out of college, with no life experience, and work for a pittance. That's because it's their first job. And for Pete's sakes, hire some straight male writers for a change.
If I may interject here, in my opinion, Hollywood will eventually move towards having artificial intelligence script future movies and just bring in human writers in order to polish the resulting scripts up.
Yeah, that seems to be the direction Hollywood is headed in. It'll cut costs and save time. Who knows? May even be an improvement over what's being produced now. Disney announced last week that the company is going to merge the Disney Plus streaming service with Hulu real soon now. Here at the old fart household, well, we've been using Hulu since it was just a website and was free of costs.
What?
I bet many don't even remember when Hulu was free and you only needed a web browser to watch it. Hulu was owned by a consortium of television networks, but recently Disney bought them all out, becoming the sole owners of the now paid subscription service that is Hulu. Disney Plus has become a disaster for Disney, bleeding subscribers steadily no matter what superhero television service they throw on it. The last time I held a Disney Plus subscription was when The Mandalorian debuted. I canceled my subscription midway through the show's second season when the plot became woke, which happened to coincide with the Mandalorian removing his helmet, revealing Pedro Pascal as the actor playing the part.
Coincidence? I think not.
Mr. Pascal has gone on to becoming the most overexposed actor of our time. I mean, he's casted for everything. This merger between Hulu and Disney Plus, besides increasing the subscription costs for everybody, is most likely intended to bump up the subscription numbers for the failing Disney Plus. Disney has got to show something positive to its stockholders, I guess. My late father was a large stockholder with Disney. If he was still alive and saw the direction the company has taken, he probably would have divested his shares. I'll most likely end up subscribing to the Hulu Disney Plus service, only because my wife does most of her television watching using Hulu. And if she's happy, well, the entire household is happy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Podcast news. I think I've covered this recently, but I'm not sure.
Ah, you're getting old, aren't you? You know, you could always go back and look that information up, don't you?
Yes, I could, but that would require me to do some work.
Gotcha.
Anyway, stand-up comedian Marc Maron announced that his long-running WTF podcast will be coming to its end this fall.
Autumn.
Okay, whatever. After being fired from the ill-fated Air America radio network, Mr. Maron started the WTF podcast from his garage some 16 years ago.
Whoa.
Making him one of the OG podcasters. His WTF podcast was the first to interview a sitting president of the United States, President Barack Obama.
Thank you so much.
It was a pretty big deal back then. Now, I respect what Mr. Maron has accomplished, and especially respect that he remained independent. Over the years, his humble garage studio has been upgraded, and I've got to admit, I'm envious. I think some of the reasons for the end of the WTF podcast are falling advertisement revenue due to a decrease in his audience, and advertisers just not paying what they once did for ads. In other words, Podcasting Incorporated and competition squeezed him and his show out. I bring this up again if I actually talked about this before, because Mr. Maron is on a farewell tour, guesting on other podcasts. The problem here is that Mr. Maron is coming off as being angry and bitter about the whole situation. He's attacked other successful podcasts like the Joe Rogan Experience and Theo Vaughn, for example, blaming them, along with so-called Christian nationalists, and those are his words, for his podcast downfall. I'm sure current President Trump was blamed also.
You are fake news.
But I didn't stick around long enough to listen to his entire interview, so I might be wrong. Mr. Maron revealed himself as just another one of these left-leaning Hollywood types who dwell in an echo chamber of their own creation. He's around my age, and you know, times change. That includes the culture. He just happened to luck out and start his podcast at the perfect time. Besides the money, high-end guests have probably dried up due to them aging out of relevance. Well, my advice to him would be to either retire or perhaps pivot to another style of podcast. You know, the interview style of WTF is now overdone these days. That nice studio he built in his garage would be a shame to waste. I do respect that Mr. Maron didn't shift to video, keeping the WTF podcast audio only, as it should be. Here's a warning, I'm going to talk about audio interfaces now.
Oh no, why?
Well, Amazon had it on sale, so I purchased a PreSonus ES2 interface last week.
Wait, I thought you had settled on purchasing and using the Rodecaster Duo.
Guilty as charged, but I know I will wind up with the Rode eventually, but lately I've been on a less-is-better kick. Sure, I'd love having the digital signal processing that the Duo would bring, but do I really need them?
I don't know, mate.
And if I'm being honest, I really don't know either. If I was still living up in the noise-saturated area that is New York, the Rodecaster Duo would have been a slam-dunk decision. But where I currently live, noise, while still a problem, can be mitigated without too much trouble. I don't know if you noticed, but the last episode of this podcast sounded sort of distorted. I'm pretty sure the reason for this was my LewitConnect 6 interface. Well, I set up the new ES2 last Friday evening. It was basically plug and play for my Mac Mini. The hardest part of the setup was getting sound from my headphones. Though I could play back previously recorded audio, I wasn't able to monitor my audio while recording. I eventually figured out that I had to toggle something in the software in order for it to work properly. The PreSonus unit is equipped with more modern and cleaner preamps. It's also constructed of mainly metal, unlike the Lewitt, which is made entirely of plastic. Like the Lewitt, the ES2 also comes with control software, which is updated regularly. The Lewitt software, though more feature-packed, hasn't been updated in years. While testing out the PreSonus, I could immediately hear a difference in my audio sound, and for the better. The audio auto-leveler function works good, as do the LED level meters. There were a few things that I didn't like about the PreSonus ES2, though. Though it has two microphone inputs, it only has one headphone jack.
What the hell?
So if you're recording two people, only one can actually monitor the audio. I guess this was done to cut costs. The other problem also concerns the headphone jack. If I turn the volume up to a usable level for these old fart ears of mine, I can hear a hissing sound. The final thing I dislike about the ES2 is, though it has a mute button, when engaged, the microphone is not muted. If you have external audio speakers attached, well, those are muted. Perhaps this can be fixed with a firmware update. I tested out recording using the ES2, and though the unit has no built-in digital signal processing, I was able to quell the noise from my central air unit in post-processing. In fact, you're listening to the ES2 right now. So, what do you think? Can you tell the difference? I'll give the PreSonus ES2 a shot, and if dissatisfied with its performance, I might have to return it. I'll definitely be getting the Rodecaster Duo sometime in the future, and maybe keep the ES2 as a backup, or not.
Hugh, I thought this would never end.
I hear you. I'll try not to talk about audio interfaces until I get the Rode, which will be this winter, I guess.
Thank you.
And to wrap things up, an article from the Podcast Business Journal, quoting a study conducted by Strategic Solutions in Point-to-Point Marketing, claims that most podcast listeners only make room for 3 podcast titles in their weekly listening routine. I think this should be reworded to most casual podcast listeners make room for only 3 titles in their weekly listening routine. I base this on my own and acquaintances' experiences. For example, if you have to commute to work, as a lot of people do, let's say 5 days per week, well, you'd burn through those 3 titles most likely in your first 3 days. Instead of taking a wide paintbrush to the study, I think it all depends on an individual's particular circumstance. I'm not even gainfully employed these days, and I listen to way more podcasts than 3. While I'm in my automobile, I'm constantly playing podcasts, and while at home, I'll have one playing while showering and getting ready for my day, and when getting ready for bed. I'm sure I'm not alone in this. Podcasts have replaced radio listening for me. Do you agree with this study's findings that most podcast listeners only listen to 3 shows per week? Well, the music is playing and the episode is almost finished. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com. And that's only if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Now, do me a solid and get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.
And that, folks, is the end of the show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.